Thanks, Eugene, for the invitation. Glad to see not everyone bailed for lunch just yet. There's general recognition that the iron cycle is coupled to other elements. For example, as oxygen is consumed and things become more anoxic and nitrate is reduced and manganese is reduced, you become iron reducing. And this cascade of redox processes here showing oxic forms of iron. We've already heard about a few phases, ferrihydrite, other sorts of phases, goethite, that occupy natural environments. And under iron reducing conditions, microorganisms, dissimilatory iron reducing bacteria can couple the oxidation of reduced organic carbon, maybe oxidation state of zero is generally assumption. In some cases they measure that. To oxidized forms of organic carbon with the concomitant production of iron 2. This iron 2 can remain dissolved, precipitate, or be absorbed, actually. So it's coupled to the carbon cycle. And in addition, folks in Scott Findorf's group have shown that contaminants like chromate, we just heard about chromate and fly ash from the previous speaker, chromate can be reduced chemically, or be reduced chemically as iron 2 is oxidized back to iron 3 with the formation of chrome 3, actually as iron 3, chrome 3 precipitates. And so it can be coupled to the chromium cycle. Interesting point is that microbial reduction of chromate is pretty slow. So Scott and others have shown that this pH is greater than 5.5. Iron 2 can be the main reductant in natural environments. And some work from the group out at Lawrence Charlet's group has shown that selenate can be transformed by iron minerals as well. A little brief review on the nitrogen cycle. Well, nitrate, or in general, nitrogen is paradoxical in that while it often limits productivity of agroecosystems, here's an example of some no-till plots of a colleague. You can see that the nitrogen fertilized plots do much better than those that are the control. It's limiting, in other words, it also is readily lost. So it's kind of paradoxical in the process of denitrification where these enzymes, nitrate reductase, nitrite reductase, nitric oxide reductase, and nitrous oxide reductase, taking nitrate all the way down to oxidation state of zero dinitrogen. Historically, this has been viewed sort of in isolation from other elemental cycles in general. In other words, heterotrophic denitrifiers, they use carbon. If you add carbon, you can stimulate this process, and it's often been assumed that it's just carbon-based from this standpoint. Some of the potential environmental concerns, well, you don't want to produce nitrous oxide. It's no laughing matter in that it is involved in atmospheric reactions, important greenhouse gas. In addition, it can be lost. Plants really can't use it when it's in gaseous form. In addition, in environments where we are trying to predict and look at carbon sequestration strategies, one has to account for nitrogen emissions. And so Johann Six and others, as they are trying to do accounting, if you are in a no-till system, for instance, where N2O production is common, you have to account for that. So it actually offsets some of the benefits of carbon sequestration. So because of these issues of greenhouse gas. And lastly, elevated nitrate is detrimental to water quality, shown here from the USGS website, the hypoxic zone here in the Gulf of Mexico. So so there's interest in understanding nitrogen chemistry, and I could have even thrown up there with bioenergy concerns, right? We have to add nitrogen. You still have to add some sort of sorts of nutrients, and nitrogen being an important one. So a recent Ecological Society of America meeting had a symposium where they talked about this coupling issues of various cycles, and I thought this title was very appropriate, Beyond Carbon and Nitrogen, How Microbial or Microorganisms Can Couple Reactions. We should just look beyond carbon and nitrogen. And so so in that light, folks have actually found in rice paddy soils, the group out of Max Planck, in Germany, shown that iron oxidation is coupled to nitrate reduction. Experiments have generally been conducted in slurries. Basically, you're minimizing diffusion and whatnot. However, nonetheless, iron 2 oxidation being coupled with nitrate reduction. It's also been observed in freshwater sediments. Kerry Weber and Eric Roden, I meant to say, doing some work down in Alabama. We've also looked at a soil from western Kentucky. Moderately well-drained classification showed that here we have iron 2 on the y-axis versus time. We took a soil that was, when the water table was pretty high, this has a frangipane, you see a little bit, and we tried to preserve them, take them back to the glove box, and then add nitrates. And when we did, and we had controls and whatnot, often wherever we added nitrate, the iron 2 level was decreased. However, this did not allow us to really get a better handle on the iron 2 contribution to nitrate reduction in terms of iron 2 oxidation, because, as you see in the control, we had not reached any sort of plateau in iron 3 reduction. In other words, not all the iron 3 is microbial reducible. However, we wanted to further look at how much of this was by looking at further experiments, as I'll talk about here in a little bit. So if we go back to this slide, except now incorporating in nitrogen, we have this issue of carbon going to oxidize carbon and forms of iron that can be reactive. But the question is, what is the contribution of iron 2 oxidation to nitrate reduction? We've published some studies where we've looked at siderite with nitrate, siderite with nitrite and other forms, and I'll talk about those here in a little bit. However, in whole soil slurries, we did not really have a good handle on that, and so that was the driver for this study. The question being to look at, let the iron 3 go to iron 2, then add fertilizer nitrate, or sodium nitrate actually, to simulate fertilizer addition. So we use the same soil. It's a Fragudalf from western part of the state. Basically, there's a breakdown, soil characteristics, total carbon, not a whole lot of carbon, not a whole lot of nitrogen, and I might add that in our experiments, we basically just took the same soil, it was air-dried, and we didn't add any amendments. We wanted to see what the native iron was doing, what the native carbon was doing, so on and so forth, as nitrate was transformed. So, you know, oftentimes, as we'll do here in a little bit, add carbon sources as a source of energy. You know, as we go to lunch, we'll be doing the same thing, get some energy. Well, we decided to keep things just native. XRD of the clay fraction, we have hydroxyurea vermiculite in the soil, kaolinite, illite, trace of vermiculite. And the CEC of this clay fraction was 39 centimoles of charge per kilogram. The iron chemical extraction data from the iron, or from the whole soil, sand, and silt. You will note in the circled areas we have the oxalate extractable to diethion extractable values for the whole soil being about 0.3, generally indicative of anything less than 0.5, we assume is somewhat well crystalline iron. And then down the road here we have the clay fraction being about 0.4. Important point to make, in the X-ray diffractograms we didn't see any evidence for goethite or any, you know, supposedly well crystalline iron minerals. However, given that the clay represented about 11% of the dry weight of the soil and yet had about 40 or so percent of the oxalate and DCB iron, we decided to pursue that a little further. And this is FTIR, spectrum of the clay fraction, plotting here absorbance versus wave number. Any of you who've collected spectrum of the clay fraction know that this is sort of on the downside of the big silica oxygen stretching peaks. And after baseline subtraction and peak deconvolution, we see this really nice band here for indicative of iron substituting in a phyllosilicate mineral. This agrees with one wave number of recent studies that have used this OH bending region to characterize iron in phyllosilicate minerals. And then we have, I said earlier, kaolinite was present. We have the diagnostic values for kaolinite. We haven't really nailed down the iron speciation. By the way, this is an oxic clay fraction. This wasn't done anoxically. However, as I think of Dan's talk earlier with the issue of iron substitution in kaolinite and these sorts of things, we may want to think about that as a potential avenue of iron substitution as a source of reduction capacity. So here's some stirred batch data. Basically, on the ordinate, we have water-soluble fraction. Here on the other y-axis, we have the HCl extractable fraction. versus time. And remember I said we wanted to sort of reach this pseudo-plateau, if you will. We wanted to try to reduce all the iron down to iron 2. No added carbon. This is an argon environment. And so you will note here that after about 28 days or so, we reached some sort of a plateau. And at that point, we added nitrate to simulate fertilizer addition. And once we added nitrate, just like we saw previously, you see an immediate drop, both in the water-soluble fraction as well as the HCl extractable fraction. And I might add, as the literature tends to always show, the HCl extractable fraction is generally much greater in concentration, indicating that a lot of the time could be absorbed or precipitated. Now, what happens to soil pH and EH during this pre-incubation on top versus post-nitrate addition on bottom? You have soil pH and EH. You will note here as we put things in the glove box, began reducing things down, our EH tends to decrease down to about negative 50 millivolts, corrected for the hydrogen electrode. And you see a slight increase in pH, consistent with iron 3 reduction going to iron 2. Post-nitrate addition, you see moderate increases in pH. EH is still pretty low. Why is that important? Well, one of the original hypotheses for this inhibition, this nitrate-iron interaction, was a poisoning of the redox. You had nitrate, and so it just knocks the EH up. Well, that's not necessarily the case, at least within the first 6 hours. We're still down here pretty low. But as we begin producing iron, as that iron 2 is oxidized, going to iron 3, it tends to raise the EH at longer time frames. Now, what's happening to nitrogen? And by the way, there was negligible nitrogen in these incubations at the outset. And so so I didn't show those first 28 days. However, once we added nitrate, you'll note this immediate reduction of nitrate here in solid circles and in open circles. We have nitrite appearing as an intermediate at much lower concentrations here on this other axis, consistent with results often showing sometimes nitrite appearing as a transient intermediate. You do the calculations here. We're not mass balanced. In other words, all the nitrite formed is not accounted for the nitrate reduced. Not uncommon either. Makes you scratch your head when you work with nitrogen. N2O production. We found N2O production concomitant with this region where we had iron 2 oxidized. Okay, and so remember I said earlier N2O is a few steps down, right? And so N2O is being produced as iron 2 is being oxidized, 0 to 6 hours. However, it declined at longer time frames. We just need to put a cot in the lab to collect this 6 to 24 hour time frame because we're probably missing a bit of the reaction, but that will be done. So N2O is produced. We are also in the process of quantifying delta N15 on N2 using stable isotope mass spec with a collaborator at Kentucky to really firm up these data. What's happening to carbon? Remember I said earlier, carbon is a player with respect to iron, and also historically denitrification was looked at from the perspective of just carbon. We measured 3 to 4 different organic acids, low molecular weight organic acids, and they basically comprise only about 10% of the total DOC on this axis. However, acetate was the largest in terms of concentration, and we have acetate concentrations here in the solid circles and then DOC here in open. So you tend to get this sort of leveling off of acetate. And then, however, once you add nitrate, no real change in acetate. However, at longer times where the nitrate was completely consumed and the iron was also oxidized but not as drastically, we see acetate reduced. And so so perhaps a segregation of processes, maybe some sort of abiotic or coupled abiotic at early time frames, and at longer time frames, more biological reduction. One of the possibilities is the discovery, 1996 by the group at Max Planck, of these nitrate-oxidizing or nitrate-dependent iron 2 oxidizing bacteria. And here's a strain where they basically looked at iron 3 production here on the ordinate versus acetate concentration. And you will note that you don't have to add a whole lot of acetate, and all of a sudden you really max out and you're iron 3 produced. And an important point to make is that this process they call mixotrophic nitrate-dependent iron 2 oxidizers. In other words, they need the presence of a co-substrate. If you get this paper, actually, it's quite profound, and it makes you realize how much we really don't know about the nitrogen cycle, because they added iron 2 to conventional denitrifiers like Pseudomonas, Stutzeri. And guess what? Iron 2 was oxidized. And so it actually is quite intriguing. So to summarize some of the data, one of the objectives was to look at the iron 2 contribution. By taking the, I had the slopes plotted earlier, linear regression, and because we assume we're going to N2, I forgot to mention no ammonium was formed, we can divide the iron oxidation rate by 5, and then divide that over the nitrate reduction rate, and we come up with some of these values. The contribution of iron 2 oxidation, nitrate reduction, sorry, that should be over here. Basically, at the values I showed you, up to about half of that is accounted for in nitrate reduction. And we fit that initial slope, by the way, I might add. We also have looked at a higher concentration, tenfold greater, of nitrates. And it was lower, basically, lower contribution of iron 2 oxidation to nitrate reduction. The literature, basically, there's some groups looking at this. Hamilton in Michigan has basically found in some freshwater areas where apparently there's some sulfitic environments, they found that sulfur oxidizing bacteria can account for 25 to 40% of the nitrate reduced. Philippe Van Capellen has done some work where he's shown pyrites in aquifers can also, you know, as sulfates being formed, they do the mass balance and some other things, and they're showing that nitrate reduction is coupled to pyrite oxidation. So it's so that's another potential pathway. And our samples, these are non-sulfitic. I'd like to close here last few moments with this coupled biological, abiological slide where we're looking at iron, nitrogen, and carbon. Starting here on the left, microbial iron reduction, producing iron 2. The red X basically means that it's very kinetically inhibited. It's not going to occur. Dissolved iron 2 reacting with nitrate is very slow, okay? However, iron 2 with these mixotrophic groups, it could happen, and the product has generally been measured to be dinitrogen. The iron 2, as I mentioned earlier, can be precipitated, and folks have looked at green rust reacting with nitrate, and generally ammonium is formed. We're in the process of characterizing the iron 2, iron 3 phases. Not to say green rust isn't there, but we're oversaturated with respect to siderite. And siderite does not react to nitrate, does react to nitrite. This could be a potential process in our slurries. Another potential option is iron 2 being adsorbed, and this surface iron 2, which has been shown in the literature, be very reactive, as all iron 2 is not created equal. Dissolved versus adsorbed and precipitated, completely different story in terms of reactivity. We are looking at this, too, in our lab. In fact, Prokostikov gives a talk tomorrow where he's looking at nitrite to surface iron 2 on goethite and looking at the transformations and seeing some of these things, N2O being a possibility. And in contrast to the situation with chromate I mentioned earlier, where microbial chromate reduction is slow compared to the chemical reduction, well, to complicate matters, nitrate reductase enzyme, that first step, if there's just a little carbon there, it can actually outcompete. It's competitive with green rust reduction, actually, in terms of rates. And so it's a potential interactive player. I might add that perhaps some of these scenarios where we're adding carbon and we see stimulation of denitrification, perhaps we're also looking at iron cycling as well. And I'll leave you with this slide showing a well-drained soil from the inner bluegrass region, the Maury silt loam. Less iron 2 produced, however, once nitrate's added, we get immediate iron 2 dependent nitrate reduction. And so it's not just confined to rice paddies or moderately well-drained soils. Just to summarize, I'll let you read that. Basically, it occurs immediately. We're in the process of really trying to tease out the biological from the abiological. You know, the traditional way is just autoclaving. But what happens? If you carry it out for 28 days, you autoclave. You know, the whole issue of iron 3 going to iron 2, we can't really do that. It's not as straightforward. So we're trying to incorporate stable isotope measurements. And we're trying to really understand the nature of these iron minerals. I'd like to thank those at UK, Martin and Dave and Joe for the IR, Mark Coyne for GC, and a French exchange student we had help work on the project, source of funding. Love to take questions. Thanks.